This podcast contains mature themes and situations. Listener discretion is advised. Episode 6, anyone? Anyone? Anyone?
Hi, this is T. Morris of Podiobooks.com, Podcasting for Dummies, and the Moravi Podcast. And you can find out more at www.tmorris.com. You are listening to Episode 6 of Murder at Avedon Hill with your host, P.G. Holyfield. Sit back and let the mystery unfold.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and performed by P.G. Holyfield. First of all, welcome back, and thanks for keeping this podcast in your podcatcher of choice. Recently, I went over 10,000 downloads of this podcast. Certainly not 10,000 listeners, but 10,000 individual downloads over the 14 or so episodes in this feed. Again, I'm going to try to keep this intro short. One thing I realized after putting out last week's episode, or episode 5 rather, that I completely forgot to thank J.C. Hutchins for his intro blurb for episode 5. Thank you, Mon Capitan. And again, for anybody that has not checked out J.C. Hutchins' Seventh Son, Book 3, Destruction, you need to head over to jchutchins.net and do that post-haste. And so I don't forget this week, thanks to T. Morris for the episode 6 intro blurb, and to this week's guest voices, Christiana Ellis, once again reading the part of Marissa, the town herbalist. And the new guest voice for this week is Caroline from Gamer the Podcasting, who is reading the part of Lane Nichols, the town librarian. So like I said, a short intro, and now let's move on to a short but sweet story so far. Aramis Cragan and Aaron Pertie have arrived at Avedon Hill, seeking use of the town's mountain pass. They have met several townspeople in the hopes of finding someone who will vouch for them, all in an attempt to gain an audience with Lord Avedon. In episode 5, after a short discussion on magic, our two heroes meet the town herbalist, Marissa, who is in need of a rare moth that makes its home in some of the caves near town. While searching for this moth, Aramis and Aaron are attacked by wolves led by a huge creature known as a moon beast. After surviving this attack, the two heroes return to town with the carcasses of several moths, but this does not satisfy Marissa's need of a live king's head moth. And now, episode 6 of Murder at Avedon Hill. Chapter 6, Metamorphosis, The Icon of Ursula, The Child of Nature. You will see Ursula everywhere. She lives in the minds and hearts of every animal you meet. The Return of the Children, a Yew children's tale. So, what now? They walked in a northwesterly direction into a part of town they had not yet visited. There is a library here in Avedon Hill. It has become known as one of the finest libraries in this part of Grosh, if my information is correct. Maybe we can find something that can help us in our search. Aaron was not in a pleasant mood.
We should talk about the moon beast. You said you had never seen one that large before?
No, there was something different about this one. Besides being very huge, it was intelligent.
Legends say that moon beasts were once men. Is this true?
Aramis shrugged his shoulders as they continued their walk.
Some say it's all started with a transformation spell that went terribly wrong and left a druid somewhere between a wolf and a man. Others say that moonbeasts are creatures that found their way into Cairn through rips in the fabric between Cairn and the outworld. Moonbeasts are also called Treg's children, Treg being the child of pain. I have never seen one that large, however, or one that runs with other animals.
Is it true that you will become a moonbeast if bitten by one?
Aramis shook his torn robes to again show Aaron the damage left by the attack of the animal. I think this beast's only goal was to kill us. As for the legend, I can only say I have not seen it myself. But it has been 20 or more years since I last ran into one of these beasts. I am far from an expert on the subject.
This area of town was no different than the rest of Avedon Hill, places of business intermingled with small homes. Aramis imagined that most of the inhabitants of Avedon Hill had a very short walk from their residence to their places of work. To the west, near the town wall, Aramis saw what had to be the abandoned temple to Artus. It was nearly concealed by trees, brush, and weeds, with only its small bell tower escaping the years of unabated growth. Turning to the south, Aramis and Aaron finally discovered the building they were looking for, the town library. Aaron smiled after hearing Aramis's sigh.
You like books a little too much.
Aramis walked towards the main door of the library.
You know, the more I think about it, I believe I miss the library at Castle Penn more than I miss the royal family.
I don't doubt that. They walked through a large door into a small alcove. On the other side of the entryway was a short set of stairs that led down to a larger open area. The walls of the open room were lined with shelves completely filled with books. There were several large chests and boxes that held parchments and scrolls, and the chests were scattered around the open floor of the library. There were several tables in the center of the floor as well, each with its own small collection of books or parchments. Both men walked down the stairs to the main level. From this position, they could see that one of the walls had a small desk that was closed off from the main floor. Behind the desk was a smaller alcove and a set of stairs that they assumed led down to a basement. There was a sign on the desk that read, "Ring Bell for Librarian." Aramis went over to strike the bell located next to the sign. Before Aramis could use the small hammer to ring the bell, the door at the bottom of the stairs opened. A woman walked through the door and glided up the stairs gracefully, with little effort or extraneous movement. Aramis noticed that the woman's dress fully covered her feet, creating the illusion that she walked without moving her legs. Aramis immediately discerned the woman must have had some sort of training during her youth to move in such an agile manner. The woman's eyes sparkled as she reached the top of the stairs. She actually clapped her hands together in excitement after coming to a stop at the edge of the desk opposite them.
Oh my, what have we here?
The woman's porcelain features were accentuated by her black hair. It was obvious from her complexion that the woman rarely left the dimly lit library. Her nearly lineless face made her appear young, but to Aramis, her eyes held a wisdom that belied her years.
My name is Lane Nichols. What can I do for two strangers to Avedon Hill?
She curtsied slightly, in apparent recognition of Aramis's position with the Aaronic Order.
Aramis Cragen, Miss Nichols, and this is my student, Aaron. We were hoping you might be able to help us. Do you have any texts that detail the fauna of this region?
The librarian raised an eyebrow.
An interesting request, Sir Aramis. Are you looking for something in particular?
Well, possibly. We are searching for locations around Avedon Hill where certain animals might be found.
Lane's eyes brightened and she smiled at Aramis.
Oh, a hunt, is it? Give me a moment.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Aramis found himself smiling as well. Aaron suddenly felt like he wasn't even in the same building as Aramis and Lane. Aramis did not move at all until the librarian had walked through the door at the bottom of the stairs.
It appears there are more books downstairs.
Aaron suppressed a comment and looked around the library's main sitting area.
It's too dark in here. You get used to it. This lady cares deeply about the books here. Light, heat, water. These are all things that can damage books over time.
Aramis indicated the light fixtures hanging above the open room. Notice the lights. The openings of the fixtures only allow a small bit of air, keeping the flames very low. If something were to happen to make those lamps fall to the floor, the flames would extinguish before anything could be damaged. Aaron feigned a yawn.
Very interesting, sir.
If I had been in Castle Penn while you were growing up, you would have spent a lot more time inside. You do not appreciate the written word as well as you should. Well, if Castle Penn had a librarian that looked like Lane Nichols, maybe I would have spent more time...
I think I have what you need right here.
Lane Nichols had returned to the desk without either of them noticing. Aramis and a now blushing Aaron turned back and saw that she was holding a rather dusty and aged book. Lane was wiping off the cover with a hand brush. The book's bindings were frayed on all sides.
This is called the Linus Compendium. Linus lived in Avedon Hill around 200 years ago. He collected a lot of information about the flora and fauna of the region. If this doesn't give you what you need, I have other books that we can try.
She handed the book over to Aramis.
Be careful of the spine. The hinge is tearing. I'll work on it now that I see how badly it needs mending.
Aramis took the book and looked it over. Of course. I think this might be just what we need. He opened it while standing at the desk. It looks to be more of a diary divided by years. Aramis began scanning the pages. Aaron saw how thick the book was and walked over to sit at one of the tables. There were books on history and religion on the table. How many books do you have here? Lane was watching Aramis intently, but heard Aaron's question.
There are 237 books on this floor and around 600 more in the basement. That does not include unbound manuscripts, scrolls, etc. that this library calls home.
How long has this library been here?
57 years. Only around 100 books in this library actually belong to the town. The rest are from my own collection.
And how long have you been the librarian here?
7 years now. I love it here. Quiet, but still on a trade route that brings me additions to the collection each year.
Aramis mulled over the numbers. That is very impressive. There can only be 3 or 4 other libraries in all of Cairn that have larger collections.
5, actually. I'll never be able to surpass the collection at the library at Thorn's Way, but the other 4 are in my sights.
Aramis nodded at the reference to the library that was shared by the priests of Cairn and the Aaronic Order, the largest in the known world. Aaron put his feet up on the edge of the table. Well, good luck with that. Aramis stopped his scanning and concentrated on one particular page. He looked up at Lane and indicated the table where Aaron now sat. Do you mind?
Of course not. Just bring the book back when you're done, Sir Aramis. I'll be downstairs if you need me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Aramis brought the book over to Aaron's table. He knocked Aaron's feet from their perch in mock anger and sat down. Rude.
So what did you find?
Well, we would be working with 200-year-old information, but according to this, there is a lake to the south of Avedon Hill, around which you can find examples of most of the animals and plants in this region. This Linus fellow seemed to concentrate most of his scientific efforts there.
How exciting.
Listen, it may not be something that you would ever want to do, but his work may have just saved us a lot of time.
Does he specifically mention the King's Head Moth?
Twice that I have found. He mentions its medicinal purposes, but nothing specific about the potions it can be used in. And he has a drawing of one here.
Aramis pointed to one of the pages in the book. It was definitely the same moth they had found earlier that day.
There was also a diagram detailing its metamorphosis from larva to moth.
Sounds good to me. Let's go find this lake.
Aaron waited outside while Aramis thanked Lane again for her help. Aramis continued brushing the dirt from his robes as they walked back to the gate. Aaron commented, "Quit smiling, would you?" Aramis exaggerated his smile even more. "Lane Nichols and I have something in common, young Aaron. It is nice to find that in a person. While I am certainly not here to pursue the fairer sex, it is nice to have met someone who shares similar interests. As for you, I am sure you will one day meet someone that you feel an immediate connection to. Yes, and it better be the daughter of a duke or a count, or it won't mean much, now will it?"
come. We have more walking ahead of us. You and your vows. We need horses. Aaron had over 30 horses of his own, all quartered quite comfortably at the royal stables at Castle Penn. Luckily for the two men, Avedon Lake was a shorter distance than their morning walk had been. There was plenty of animal life in the forest surrounding the lake. The lake itself was very large. By the looks of it, Aaron guessed it would take at least a day's travel to circle the entire lake. But in only a short time, they found a small swampy area off of the lake that gave them what they needed, in a manner of speaking. For the second time that day, they found some moth carcasses, but no living King's Head moths. Aaron was about to scream when he made a discovery of his own. Aramis, what do you think about this? Aaron pointed to three caterpillars crawling across a tree trunk that was laying across the ground. Near to where they were crawling were several butterflies and moths fluttering around, but no King's Head moths. Aramis inspected the creatures. Look at those markings on those caterpillars. They matched the drawings in the book, I believe. Caterpillars in the winter, though. I thought caterpillars appeared in the spring. Very good, Aaron, but in our case, this does make sense. In Linus's book, he described the King's Head moth's life cycle. The King's Head is born as a caterpillar during the fall. They burrow into the ground and live through the winter in a state of hibernation. Then in the spring, they crawl out and eventually become moths. But Marissa said she needed a live King's Head moth. Aramis held up several carcasses. Well, as you can see, the weather must have killed them all. We've got to give this a try. They gathered up the three caterpillars and hurried back to town. Marissa was initially unpleased with their efforts.
I ask for a moth, and you bring me caterpillars? Are you both daft?
Aramis pulled one of the caterpillars out and placed it on the table in front of Marissa. Look at these markings. This will become a King's Head moth. All of this year's King's Head moths are dead. You have to realize that by now. This is what you've got to work with, Marissa. Marissa stared at the caterpillar for a moment. Then her eyes widened, and a small gasp escaped her. Ah! Marissa ran over to a shelf that held several books. She pulled one down and shuffled through some pages. She eventually stopped and scanned one page, then scanned it again to be sure. She came back, book in hand, and slammed it on the table.
This might just work. There is an elixir here that might bring about the caterpillar's metamorphosis. If it works right, I might have a moth in 2 or 3 days. Yes!
In an instant, Marissa had hope again, and she became a whirling dervish in her lab, rushing around, pulling down bottles of reagents and other supplies. She forgot completely about the two men still in her shop. Marissa, if this meets your needs, as it apparently does, do you have something for us? Marissa looked up and stared at them, a dumbfounded look on her face. She blinked twice, and then snapped her fingers in recognition.
Ah, yes, where is it? Here!
She pulled a small scroll tube from the belt of her garment and threw it in their general direction.
I really don't know what you plan on getting out of this. Lord Avedon is not going to open the pass for you.
You could be quite right, but this will get us a step closer to our goal. Thank you, Marissa. Marissa did not hear Aramis. She was already hard at work. The two men let themselves out. They headed directly to the iron gates surrounding Avedon Manor. So, Aramis, what is the plan? Well, if Constable Lewis is a man of his word, this will get us an audience with Lord Avedon. And then what? One of the greatest lessons you can learn in life is the law of supply and demand. It applies not only to trade, but to people as well. We just need to learn what Lord Avedon needs and show him we can get it or do it for him. If we succeed in that, then he should give us what we want as well. What if he doesn't want anything? What if he just wants us to leave him alone? Aramis put a hand on Aaron's shoulder. Well then, young prince, we will have to find a way to change his mind.
Thank you. the part of Takira will also justify your presence at the meeting with the merchant circle. Have one of your guard fetch my men. Know your place, pirate, Ascana snapped. I am queen of this realm, and you do not order me or my royal guard about
as if you were on board your ship. You may request a boon from the Crown of a Thousand Suns, but you may never order. I am Ascana Moldaren of Moravi. Welcome to the New Age.
Moravi. Remastered.
Coming soon. www.moravi.net.
Thanks for sticking around. No real babble for the outro today. Been working on some things for the podcast. I've got a new promo that I've been working on, both an audio version and a video version. It'll be in Flash, so it's taking me some time to learn how to do it so it looks right. And I'm still waiting for some audio from some people so I can really make the promo worthwhile. Now, there is one thing I wanted to mention. That is, out of left field, last week I found out that not only am I a Parsec nominated podcaster for work done last year on the Nano Monkeys podcast with Mer Lafferty, KJ Johnson, and Chris Miller. We are now finalists, the Nano Monkeys finalists in the best writing related podcast at the Parsec Awards. Just amazing stuff. What's so amazing about this is the list of nominees other than the Nano Monkeys. Just listen to the other finalists. First, we have Michael A. Stackpole's The Secrets podcast, which Mr. Stackpole won this award in last year's Parsec Awards, the inaugural Parsec Awards. Next, we have Mer Lafferty, one of the Nano Monkeys hosts, wonderful podcast, and the one that I am openly rooting for, to win the I Should Be Writing podcast. Next, we have the wonderful Dragonhearth podcast with Tracy and Laura Hickman. And last but certainly not least is Whispers from the Edge, which is Pip Ballantyne's writing podcast and all-around life as an author podcast based in New Zealand, where she lives. And on a side note, Philippa Ballantyne just signed on to read the part of Greta Platt's mother, Gloria Platt. How cool is that? Anyways, the phrase, it was an honor just to be nominated, has never been more appropriate than with this particular nomination in this category for me. I mean, the authors from the other podcasts have over, 50 novels to their credit? It's like I'm at the bottom of this long staircase, and I'm looking up and I'm seeing Mer and Pip and Mr. Stackpole and Tracy and Laura Hickman. I mean, hell, last year at DragonCon, I was getting my photo taken with these people and just thrilled to get to meet them. And I was getting Tracy Hickman's autograph on my copy of DL1, the Dragons of Despair module. And, you know, this year at DragonCon, I'm going to be able to act upset when I don't win or when we don't win for the Nano Monkeys podcast. What a year. I could go on about what a year this has been, but I won't. For those of you that will be at DragonCon, please feel free to buy me a beer to commiserate about the loss, our loss, of the Parsec Awards. So next time we will have Chapter 7, our largest cast appearance yet. We have at least 6 or 7 guest voices in Chapter 7, and we'll get to meet or have our first meeting with Lord Avedon. I look forward to it, and it should be out, or will be out, next week before DragonCon. So until next time, thanks for listening.
The world is changed. I feel it in the internet. I smell it in the podosphere. Much that once was is lost. And good riddance.
Okay, enough of that melodramatic garbage. I'm Nina Kimberly the Merciless, star of the award-nominated podcast novel by Christiana Ellis. I am not a damsel in distress. I do not wear a chainmail bikini, and I do kill people. But you don't have to take my word for it. I also bully people into saying nice things about me.
Hi, this is Mer Lafferty from Geek Fu Action Grip. Nina Kimberly is a cross between Robin McKinley and Terry Pratchett. You've got a kick-ass heroine in situations that are absolutely bizarre and hysterical.
Hi, this is T. Morris, the Patio Books Moravi, The Chronicles of Rafe Nascana, and Billabub Battings in the Case of the Singing Sword. I think the best way to describe Nina Kimberly the Merciless, it's The Princess Bride if Monty Python wrote it, because it features a dragon with big, sharp, pointy teeth.
Hi everyone, it's Evo Terra. As you may know, I'm not a big fan of fantasy. However, I truly enjoyed Nina Kimberly the Merciless. Funny, snarky, and action-packed. Oh, that all fantasy was written like this.
See? It's good. So why don't you go subscribe at patiobooks.com or at ninakimberly.com, and we can avoid any unfortunate misunderstandings. That's Nina Kimberly the Merciless by Christiana Ellis. Subscribe or die. Either way is fine with me.
Are you a procrastinator? Have you been thinking, well, I've heard good things about the patio book series Heaven and Hell, but I've got other stuff to listen to? Well, hey, don't take my word for it. I just write the dang thing.
Hi, this is Matthew Wayne Selznick, the author of Brave Men Run, a novel of the Sovereign Era at bravemenrun.com, and I'm here to tell you, Mer Lafferty's podcast novels, Heaven and Hell, are a literary afterlife amusement park, full of surprises, terror, and joy. If you haven't visited, now's the time, as a whole new land has opened, Earth. No lines, no waiting. Listen to Heaven, Hell, and get ready for Earth.
Season 3 of Heaven is dropping June 23rd at patiobooks.com. And if you haven't listened to Heaven or Hell yet, they're still available at patiobooks.com. They're all three ready for you. Now what are you waiting for?
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and performed by the author. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast provided by Shira Common through magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin McLeod through incompetech.com. This podcast is copyright 2007, PG Holyfield, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 2.5 license.